Hello, and welcome to this week's edition of Maplewood Barn Radio Theater, brought to you in conjunction with KBIA. In keeping with our tradition of bringing you classic stories in an audio format, tonight's presentation is based on a wonderful short story by Meredith Nicholson called The Madness of May. Actually, it is the second part of the story that we presented last week. So just for those of you who may not have been listening or have relatively short memories, let me reprise what you've missed. In last week's show, we discovered that our hero, Billy Deering, had stolen some bonds from his father to cover the stock market losses of an old college friend, Ned Ranscombe. Ranscombe had invested too heavily in the Mizpah copper mines. Billy put the pilfered bonds in a suitcase, which was mistakenly taken by a young woman at a train station. Are you following this so far? After losing the stolen bonds, a mysterious stranger arrived at Deering's home, called himself Mr. Hood, and he offered to help Billy with his dire situation. They had a strange encounter with a girl dancing in a clown costume under the moonlight. Her name was Pierrette, and Billy was enchanted with her. To shield his identity, he introduced himself as Mr. Tuck. She invited he and Mr. Hood to breakfast the next morning in a nearby bungalow and then didn't show up. While at the bungalow, though, Deering discovered the suitcase he had lost at the train station. But alas, there were no bonds, only blank sheets of paper. Was Billy's father a swindler? In a fit of May madness, Hood twirled a silk slipper on his finger to determine which direction they should go next, and the slipper pointed east. But first, our intrepid heroes must refresh themselves at their headquarters, the Barton Arms.
When we arrived back at the Barton Arms, two telegrams were waiting for me at the front desk.
Who are they from?
This is alarming. I wired to a bank and a club in San Francisco last night, and they've sent word that Father isn't in San Francisco. Never arrived there. And I wired the people my sister Constance was supposed to visit in Pasadena, and they don't know anything about her. Oh, this is awful.
It sounds like straight information, but why worry?
But why would Father lie to me? Why would Constance say she was going to California if she wasn't?
My dear boy, don't ask me such questions. You are guilty of the gravest error, sending telegrams without consulting me. How can we trust ourselves to Providence if you persist in sending telegrams? Now we move eastward toward the Connecticut border, Cassowary. Let's be off.
Hood was as merry as the morning itself, and talked ceaselessly as we rolled through the country, occasionally bidding Cassowary slow down and give heed to his discourse. I don't want to appear fussy, Hood, but would you mind telling me what's next on your program?
Not at all. It's just occurred to me that it would be fun to dine tonight in one of the handsome villas scattered throughout these hills. Still following the slipper, we shall choose one somewhere east of the inn. First we will walk, then we will nap. Yes, we will be alert and ready for whatever adventures we may have in store for us.
There was no escaping Hood or changing his mind once he had announced a decision. The program was put through exactly as he has indicated. Cassowary accompanied us on the walk, and I found him both agreeable and interesting. At one point, Hood left us to look at the hieroglyphics on a barn, which he said was a veritable bulletin board of cryptic notations from roving thieves. Cassowary's manner underwent a marked change when we were alone.
If you're going to give the old boy the slip, I want you to let me know. I don't want to be left alone with him.
I can't shake him.
Well, me neither. I was in a bad way when he picked me up, just about ready to jump off a high building and let it go at that. And he does seem to make things brighter. While we're alone, I'd like to ask you this. What's he running away from? Why does he read newspapers all the time? What's he looking for?
You've got me there. We ran into some men the other night who he said were detectives, but it didn't seem to worry him.
Well, there's nothing new in that. We've run into a number of men who were looking for somebody, and he enjoys toying with them. If he was really a crook, he would take it more seriously.
Here he comes, reading a newspaper as usual.
You don't need to be afraid of getting into trouble with him. He pulls off things you would think are impossible. He's a marvel, that man.
Old Bill Fogarty's been stripping country stores in these parts. Ah, there's his mark on the barn, all right. Amusing cuss, Fogarty. Sawed himself out of most of the jails between here and Bangor. We'll probably meet up with him somewhere. It's about time to go back for that snooze, boys. Let's go.
That night, Casuary drove us slowly past several country villas. He finally ordered Casuary to stop at the entrance to an imposing estate with a large colonial mansion.
This looks promising. Drive up to the house, Casuary.
Hood applied the knocker, and a butler opened the door. Hood advanced into the hall with his most authoritative air.
Mr. Hood and Mr. Tuck, I understand that we dine at 7. We are expected. Please announce us immediately. Assurance, my dear boy, conquers all things. This stuff looks like real Chippendale. Very nice furnishings. Ah, hello, madam. My friend and I are weary from a long journey and wish to dine with you this evening.
Which is Hood and which is Tuck?
The friar is the gentleman standing on my foot to your right. Conscious of my unworthiness, I plead guilty to being Hood. Hood the hobo delectable, the tramp incomprehensible. We ask nothing of you but seats at your table in the favor of a little wholesome and stimulating conversation.
I make it a rule never to deny food to any applicant, no matter how unworthy. You may remain.
Who are these two derelicts, Columbine?
Father, don't be so rough. This is Mr. Hood and Mr. Tuck, and this is my father, Pantaloon.
Are these ruffians going to dine with us?
Yes, they are gracing us with their presence, Father. Shall we go in to dinner?
My dear Mr. Tuck, it's a pleasure to find ourselves at last in a home done with good taste. Fate has again been kind to us. We are among folk of quality, as I had already guessed.
You will sit at my right, Mr. Hood, and Mr. Tuck by my father on the other side. Thank you for joining us, dear Mr. Hood and Mr. Tuck. This is my daughter, Pierrette. Pierrette, stop dancing. Sit down, please.
But you're the Little Dipper girl.
Yes.
And I am Pantaloon. My daughter is Columbine, as you may have guessed.
It's very nice to see you again. But, of course, I didn't know you would be here. How goes the burgling?
I haven't gotten started yet. I find it a little difficult.
You're not getting much fun out of the adventurous life?
I don't understand things, that's all. But I think I'm going to like it.
Is it a little too full of surprises? Oh, that's how it is for all of us at first. You see, Grandfather Pantaloon is 70, and he never grew up. And Mama is just like him. And I
you
am...
You are wonderful. Bewildering.
The trouble with America today is the lack of fun. The American people have utterly lost their capacity for laughter.
And here is our last diner, Smeraldina. Please take a seat.
As I looked up at the new girl, the last remnants of my sanity seemed to slip away. I was looking into the face of my sister, Constance. She was dressed as a servant. I was about to gasp out her name when she gave a quick shake of her head.
Smeraldina, how is that last chapter? You see, gentlemen, my daughter is an author, and Smeraldina is her secretary. If that new book is half as good as The Madness of May, it will be a great pleasure.
Oh, it's much better.
Tuck, do you realize that we are in the presence of greatness? Please accept my heartiest congratulations, Miss Columbine.
Oh, well, thank you kindly. I'm fortunate Smeraldina is here to help.
I hope, Mr. Tuck, you aren't too upset that I didn't show up for breakfast.
Certainly I was a bit disappointed. But not upset.
I'd been weekending with Babette. She's an artist, you know, and I'm posing for another of Mama's heroines. Babette got me up at daylight to pose for the last picture, and then I skipped and left her to manage the breakfast.
It was nice, but it would have been better if you had joined us.
You understand, of course, that it's a dark secret that Mother is an author. She scribbled for her own amusement all her life and published The Madness of May just to see how the public would react.
I understand that it's very amusing.
Oh, you haven't read it? Mama, Mr. Tuck hasn't read your book.
My young friend is just beginning his education. I believe The Madness of May will become a classic, something the tired world has needed for years.
Right. You are quite right, sir. The Madness of May isn't a novel. It's a textbook on happiness.
True words have never been spoken.
You know, Pierrette, I feel so out of place. There's so much I don't understand.
Oh, please don't. You must never try to understand things like this. You see Grandpa and Mama larking about, and this is a lark. There's no use trying to understand a lark.
Once when I was in jail in Utica...
I regretted that my legs were too short to kick my erratic companion under the table, but a chorus of approval greeted Hood's opening, and he continued to tell a story in which he had once been incarcerated with a colorful pickpocket. My sister's presence in the house was still a mystery to me, but there was no opportunity to speak with her privately. Pierrette and I continued talking as Hood regaled the others with stories.
You are staring at me.
Oh, yes? I apologize. I just want to get to know you better.
Perhaps you will never know me.
Don't say such a thing.
Well, maybe someday we will meet just as the people of the world meet, and then maybe you won't like me at all.
After this, the world will never be the same again. From now on, my mission will be to follow you.
Even to the Little Dipper?
Even to the farthest star.
See, you are becoming one of us.
After coffee had been served in the drawing room, Hood, again dominating the conversation, much to my disgust, suggested music. I fidgeted a while, then finding the others preoccupied with the music, I quietly left the drawing room. It occurred to me I might get in a word with Constance, who had disappeared when we left the table. I slipped into the library just in time to see an outer door opening, and Cassowary stepped into the room. I hid in a dark corner as the chauffeur glanced around nervously. A shadow darted by, and my sister, for there was no doubt it was Constance, moved swiftly toward Cassowary. He kissed her eagerly, and she seemed to return his passion. This went on for some time, until an outburst of laughing from the drawing room parted the two with a final kiss, and Cassowary darted through the outer door. Constance was composing herself when I stepped out from the shadows. So, this is what you're up to, is it? I suppose you don't know that's a worthless vagabond Hood picked up in hope of reforming. For all I know, he may actually be the chauffeur.
You don't know what you're talking about. That man is a gentleman, and if he went to pieces for a while, it was my fault. I met him at the Drakes last year, and he came to our house afterward, but Father took a strong dislike to him and wouldn't let me see him again. I knew he was with this man, Hood, and when I left the table, I slipped him a note to meet me here.
It looks like you had quite a meeting. Who is he?
Torrance is his name. He's a rancher in Wyoming.
Oh, I'm sorry I spoke so roughly. I was just trying to protect my little sister.
Yes, I know. But, Billy, who is this man Hood?
I don't know. I was in an awful mess when he turned up, Connie. I'd gone into a copper deal with Ned Ranscombe and needed more money to help get him through with it. I put in all I had and then swiped one of Father's boxes at the bank for more and lost it, sort of. God knows what's become of it. I would take a week to tell you the whole story. Ranscombe disappeared, and I would have killed myself if that lunatic Hood hadn't turned up. But what in heaven's name are you doing here? Why aren't you in California? I nearly fainted when you came into the dining room.
We can't talk here, but I can clear up a few things. Father read that woman's book, and it went to his head. He's acting like those people in the drawing room, like he's got the May madness. Father took off to have adventures like the people in that book and dragged me along to get my mind off Tommy.
Tommy?
Mr. Torrance. But Billy, Father really is looking for someone, but I'm not sure who. He made me answer an advertisement and take this position to spy on these people.
My God! Who in the world are these lunatics, anyhow?
I don't know, Billy. Honestly, I don't. Father suspects something and made me watch them. And I never saw Mr. Hood until tonight. I've been here a week, and only one person has come to the house, and that was Ned Ranscombe.
Ned?
Yes. He came here to see a girl, an artist, who made the pictures for The Madness of May. He's crazy about her.
So, he took my $2 million and got me to steal two more, and then went chasing a girl.
Another victim of May madness.
Not Ned. Not Ranscombe. That settles it. We've all gone loony.
Well, even so, we can't get caught here. Oh, listen, the music has stopped.
Tell me quick, where can I find Father?
If you must know, Billy, he's in jail. In jail! Tommy heard about it in the servant's kitchen. But we must hurry. Goodbye for now, brother.
As Constance scurried away, I re-entered the drawing room and was immediately accosted by Hood.
Tuck, my boy, you should cultivate the art of music. Madam, we must be on our way. Will you ring for Cassowary, Prince of Chauffeurs, as we leave your hospitable home at once?
Mr. Tuck, it has been a great honor having you in our home. Please stop by whenever you are in the area.
Thank you for your kindness. Tomorrow, Pierrette, I shall find you, either here or in the Little Dipper.
Before you see me or the Dipper again, many things may happen. Goodbye, at least for now.
Ta-ta!
Cheerio!
Goodbye.
Adieu.
Well, what do you think now?
Well, you seem to make it work, but I can't go on this way.
Now, that is not a positive attitude.
I'm sorry, but I've heard news that my father is in jail.
What? This is important. Cassowary, what have you heard about the arrest of a gentleman named Deering?
He's been nabbed, all right. The police over in West Dempster are trapping speeders. And they nailed Mr. Deering about sundown, doing over 80 miles per hour.
Oh, this is marvelous. But he's probably bailed himself out.
No, sir, that can't be. You see, the judge is away for the night, and there's nobody to fix bail.
Cassowary, at the next crossroads, go right and turn in at the farmhouse. We'll stop there and change our clothes.
Oh, I can't stand it. I'm sick of all this business, I tell you.
My dear boy, have I failed you at any time? Stop whining and trust all to your friend Hood. Yes, this is it, Cassowary. Turn in here.
Whose place is this? I want to know what I'm getting into.
Mine, dearest Tuck. Mine. And the taxes are paid. I use it as a rest house for weary crooks, if that will ease your mind. Look, here's a note from old Fogarty. He's been resting here between jobs. Skipped yesterday, same chap that left his mark for me on that barn. One of the good old fellows, Fogarty. Here, Tuck, put on these mud-spattered pants. And this dilapidated coat and hat should match nicely. Cassowary, you need to put on old clothes as well. And I will wear the nastiest attire in the pile.
What are we doing? Why are we changing clothes?
Three suspicious characters will be arrested by the police of West Dempster within 2 hours. Into the slammer we will go, my dear Tuck. It will give me great joy to reunite you with your father.
Hood, for God's sake, what fool things are you doing now?
We're going to jail. The moment we step out of this shack, we're criminals, crooks, gallows meat. This will top all our other adventures. Hopefully Fogarty is already there. He likes to get pinched occasionally just for the fun of it.
He's got something up his sleeve. And everything will be fine. I've been in jail with him before.
At 1 o'clock, West Dempster lay dark and silent before us. Hood moved cautiously.
Remember, we give up without a struggle. There's too much at stake to risk a bullet now. Here, this alley should do.
Why are we going into an alley?
To arouse the police, like this.
Yes, that should get someone's attention.
These country cops are sometimes shrewd, but often silly. West Dempster has an evil reputation in the underworld. Arresting speeders is purely a sideshow. They run in anybody they catch after the curfew sounds at the coffin factory.
All right, hold it right there. We've got you covered.
Throw up your hands, boys. It's no use.
Yeah, more than burglars. Don't you fellas try any monkey shines or we'll plug you full of lead. Now, trot along.
And here come two more policemen. The whole force is honoring us tonight. I admire your efficiency, gentlemen. I will recommend you all for positions in the Secret Service. Men of your genius are wasted in a little country town like this.
When we reached the town hall, a melancholy jailer roused himself and led us to the lockup in the rear of the building.
You're all charged with attempt to commit burglary and arson.
Oh, I had hoped for something more, like murder or piracy on the high seas. Burglary and arson are so commonplace. Oh, look, here's my old buddy Fogarty. I hoped he was here.
And there is...
This is an outrage, locking me up with these felons, these common convicts. I demand counsel, and when I get out of here, I'm going to the governor of this damned state and complain. To be locked up with one safe blower is enough, and now you've stuck three murderers in this rotten hole. I tell
hey,
you...
Hey! Shut up! Don't make me come in there!
Father!
Unhand me, you cad!
It's me, Billy! For God's sake, be quiet!
Billy! What are you in for?
Oh, you know. Burglary, arson, the normal stuff.
You've been reading that damned book, too, haven't you? You've gone crazy like everybody else. I can tell.
I'm Friar Tuck, and that chap over there is Robin Hood.
Hood.
That's me.
Hood, this is my father.
A great pleasure, I'm sure. I suppose it was inevitable that we should meet sooner or later, Mr. Deering.
You're Bob. Bob Tyringham.
Right, and I must admit you've given me a good chase. Tuck, your father is one of the true Brotherhood of the Stars. He's been chasing me for a month. But when I heard that he'd been jailed for speeding with a prospect of spending Sunday in this hole, I decided that it was time to take off the mask.
Wait. Let me get this straight. You are Robert Tyringham? The Robert Tyringham that is a trustee of father?
Yes, $2 million worth of trust. And that's a lot of trust.
But you've not been heard from in years.
True. Since my youth, I have been subject to wanderlust.
You have been missing for 10 years. If I hadn't found you by next Wednesday, I would have had to turn your property over to 12 charities, as provided for in your father's will. And I've been fighting the temptation to steal it. I've spent thousands of dollars trying to find you, fearing one day you might turn up, and the next day afraid you wouldn't. Your father was my dearest friend, and it's been horrible. After I told Billy that I was taking Constance to California, I decided to make a last effort to find Tyringham. I read a damn novel that acted on me like a magical spell. That's why I've made a fool of myself, thinking I could masquerade all over the country and catch Tyringham at his own game. And now you know what I might have been. A common thief.
Don't talk like that, Father. I guess we're in the same hole, only I'm in deeper. I tried to rob you. I tried to steal some of the Tyringham money myself, but it...
You took the bonds from my box, Billy? Well, you were too late. I had already stolen it. My God, I couldn't help it. I left that waste paper in the envelopes and hid the real goods at home. I hoped I'd never find Tyringham and I could keep those bonds. But all the time I kept looking for him. You see, I couldn't be as bad as I wanted to be, and yet...
And yet, if you hadn't hid the real bonds, I'd have been a thief. Ned Ranscombe was trying to corner Mizpah Copper and needed my help. I put in all I had, and then he skipped. When I get a hold of him...
You put $2 million in Mizpah?
I did, like a fool, and of course it's lost. Ned went daffy about a girl and dropped Mizpah, and my money.
What did Ranscombe buy at?
7 1/4, I think.
Then don't kick Ned. Mizpah's gone to 40 a share. And as for you, Tyringham...
I apologize for giving you the runaround, Mr. Deering, but the idea of handling a great fortune did not appeal to me. I honestly like the life of a vagabond. But now that I am middle-aged, it is time to change my ways.
Your wife will probably appreciate that.
What? You're married?
Of course he's married. Thank heaven your wife had a fortune of her own. She was one of Augustus Davis's daughters, so she hadn't been forced to suffer for your foolishness.
My wife shares my tastes. There was never any trouble between us. Our daughter is just like us. But now Mrs. Tyringham thinks we ought to settle down and be respectable.
After I began to suspect that you and Hood were the same person, I put my own daughter into your house on Dempster Road to spy on you.
My wife wasn't fooled for a minute. We were having our last fling before settling down. We all have the same weakness for a springtime lark, my wife, my daughter, and I.
Pierrette? Pierrette is your daughter?
Certainly, and Columbine, the dearest woman in the world, is my wife, and Pantaloon is my father-in-law.
Throughout our adventures, there was only one coincidence. Everything else was planned. It was Pierrette, whose real name is Roberta, Bobby for short. Bobby really did lift your suitcase by mistake. I came to your house to return it, but when I saw that you needed diversion, I decided that we should have some fun together. Cassowary moved the suitcase to the studio where you found it. I steered you to the house on purpose to see how you and Bobby would hit it off. The results seem to have been satisfactory.
Well, yes.
And before we quit all this foolishness, there's one thing I want to ask you, Mr. Deering, as a special favor. That fellow lying over there is Tommy Torrance, who you kicked off your doorstep for loving your daughter. He's one of the best men in the world. Just because his father, the old senator, didn't quite hit it off with you in that railroad deal before Tommy was born is no reason why you should take it out on the boy. He started turning bad after you threatened him with that shotgun, but he's been with me 6 months and he is both loyal and honest. You've got to let up on him or I'll be pretty hard on your boy if he ever wants to get into my family.
Yes, all right, I was hard on the boy.
Well, it's been a mighty good time. Let's all go to sleep. Tomorrow night, my old buddy Fogarty will get us out. He's over there now, sawing the first bar of that window.
A year passed, and it was May again, the last day of that month of enchantment. Father was having a house party at our home in Radford Hills. Constance came from Wyoming to spend May with Father, bringing with her, of course, her husband, once known as Cassowary, who had been elected to the legislature of his state and, it is reported, may be governor one of these days. The Tearinghams were there, including Robert Tearingham, alias R. Hood, and his wife, author of The Madness of May. Mr. and Mrs. Edward Ranscombe were also present. Marriage had not interrupted Mrs. Ranscombe's career as an artist, though she is now specializing in children's portraits with great success. Pierrette and I were very happy together. That afternoon, we were sitting on the front porch together.
Mama has been nervous all month about Papa. But now that May is over and he hasn't tried to run away, I suppose he's really cured.
Yes, he hasn't mentioned his old roving days lately. I think he's sensitive about it.
But even if he took off, it wouldn't break Mama's heart. I'm just a little sorry.
Shh! There's someone coming around the corner of the house.
It's Papa. He's got a suitcase.
But he'll come back. I haven't got the heart to stop him.
No, it would be cruel to do that.
Take the slipper and twirl it 3 times and west. All right, west it is.
And he set off, walking down the road. We hope you've enjoyed the second installment of Meredith Nicholson's short story, The Madness in May, as presented by the Maplewood Barn Radio Players. Her performers in this show were Jeff Martin as Deering, Chris Bowling played Hood, Val Davis was Pierrette. The cast also included Paul Davis as Cassowary, Heather Harlan as Columbine, Byron Scott as Pantaloon, Deb Davis as Constance, and Carrie Butter was Deering's father. The show was engineered by Darren Helwig and adapted for radio by Brad Buchanan, with post-production by Amy Humphrey and Joe Hayes of the band Clatter. We're also hoping you'll tune in next week at this time for the first of our summer replays with favorites from the past year, right here on KBIA.